From the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Want to know more about Pulitzer Prize finalists from The Ohio State University? Well, this is the show for you today as I interview OSU creative writing professor Lee Martin, and we talk about his new book, Break the Skin. Stay tuned. Lee Martin is the author of five novels, including 2006's The Bright Forever, which was a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and River of Heaven, Quakertown, and most recently, Break the Skin. He has written two memoirs and a short story collection. He lives in Columbus, Ohio, where he directs and teaches in the Creative Writing MFA program at The Ohio State University. Welcome, Lee Martin, to Writer's Talk.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Good to be here.
Great. Well, I'm very happy you're here. I read online that you really want to be introduced with a line from a review of Break the Skin from Publishers Weekly saying, "Here he is, crackling with dark deeds and bad intentions, Lee Martin." So now you've been introduced that way.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Right. And I tried to use the exclamation point that was in it. So let's get to your dark deeds. Tell me about Break the Skin. Tell me about the new book.
Well, in Break the Skin, the premise is based upon a revenge plot that goes wrong. Three women are involved in a romantic triangle with another man. Well, two of the women are, and the narrator, Lainey, is deeply devoted to one of those women, Delilah Dade. And they become convinced that the third woman, Rose, has placed a hex on them. And the only way to get rid of the hex is to kill Rose. Mm-hmm. This early in the book, they decide that this is not a good idea, so they call that all off. But Lainey finds out that it's harder to get away from that plot than she thought it would be. And so the book does revolve around this revenge plot of murder. Lainey tries to separate herself from that and finds out that it's really hard to do that.
Okay. And so this is based on what in your life? Love triangles around you and being the subject of this, or this is just fiction? I'm not sure which is not.
Doug, this is what we call a novel, and so this is fiction, but it does have a basis in reality in the respect that I was aware of a story of a woman who had convinced these other people that a young girl had placed a hex on all of them. And really what brought me to the novel was trying to figure out how in the world a woman could have that much sway over other people to make them believe that. And it led me to the story of the young woman, 19-year-old woman, upon whom I based the character of Lainey, mm-hmm. who was a girl who had never been in trouble, the sort of girl that was fairly unremarkable, and yet for some reason found herself under the influence of this older woman who convinced her that the hex was in place. Mm-hmm. And that's what really drew me to the subject matter, was I was really curious about how this could happen.
Okay. So you're writing to discover the answers for yourself in a book like this?
Usually I'm always writing out of some curiosity that I have. I think that what keeps me going is trying to figure things out. And so a lot of my writing process involves just starting in the midst of a story and seeing where I can take that each day as I try to answer the questions that I have. And I have a feeling that if I make myself curious, I'll make the readers curious too.
What kind of answers did you come to? What did you write yourself into the answers? Not to give away the plot, but what is it for you now that you've written the book around the idea of how can someone have this kind of influence over other people?
Well, one of my characters, the other narrator of the book, is a woman in Texas named Betty Ruiz, or she goes by the name of Miss Baby because she owns Miss Baby's Tats, the tattoo parlor. And toward the end of the book, she simply says that it was all about wanting to matter to someone, wanting so badly to matter to someone that you found yourself doing things that you never thought you would do, all for the sake of love. And so what I found on the underside of these dark deeds and evil intentions was the fact that it happens because people want to matter to other people. Mm-hmm. And so they go to extremes that they never thought they would go to. So really, it's a story of love underneath all of that.
It's a love story.
It is.
A comforting love story. It's really interesting that you say that it's all about mattering, wanting to matter to somebody else, because, I come from a background of rhetoric and persuasion, things like this, and we're always thinking that it's the person who has the ability to persuade others, mm-hmm. that is really what the plot turns around. But this is the other way. It's saying wanting to believe in that person, wanting to matter to that person, is really what the world turns around.
Well, particularly in the case of Lainey, she wants to matter so much to Delilah Dade that she finds herself allowing this belief in the hex to exist. Mm-hmm. And once she allows the space for that, then she's on a road that is going to be hard for her to get off of. She tries her best, but events have been set in motion at that mm-hmm. point, and they have to come to their end.
Right, and from the position she's narrating from, she actually remarks on that once or twice in the novel, had I known mm-hmm. then, and she's doing that kind of foreshadowing, which I found interesting. Now, you were born and raised in a small Illinois town, probably similar to a lot of Ohio towns, and you describe it as, quote, "I'm connected to the rhythm of the seasons, the stark beauty of its landscape, the come and go of its people." And the connection is evident in Break the Skin. There's a lot of sort of landscape plays a role in a lot of the book. But I'd like to hear more about how you see your background as appearing in your writing. For example, I'm an Ohio native, and I have to say that I'm not always aware of the stark beauty of the landscape of the Midwest. So what is it that you're referring to there? What in both the stark beauty, the come and go of the people, the rhythm of the seasons, how were you connected to that, and how does it show up in the writing?
Well, my father was a farmer in mm-hmm. southeastern Illinois, and my mother was a grade school teacher. And because my father was a farmer, I was from a very early age attuned to the changing of the seasons, the way weather affects the crops, the way the landscape changes throughout the seasons, and that sort of thing. And once I lived away from the Midwest, as I have for a while, I've been back here for 10 years here in Columbus, but once I lived away from the Midwest, I started to miss it. I started to miss the changing seasons. I was living in Texas for quite a while, and I missed the changing of the seasons. And so now that I'm back, it's all very poignant to me. And so if I take a drive across I-70, for example, through Indiana and into my native Illinois, even if it's the dead of winter, I'm just charmed by the landscape. I love the brown fields. I love the snow falling in the dead furrows of the fields. And that changes, as the seasons change. And I do find a stark beauty in the Midwestern landscape. And I find that also in the people of the Midwest. And I've been on a campaign here lately for literature from the Midwest, which I think is, has its own place in our canon these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting in this book because you've got somebody from the Midwest, Lainey. All of these characters seem to be Lainey, and the group in Illinois seem to be natives, and then Miss Baby is in Texas, but the description of Texas is very different than that. But it's sort of the othered for a couple of reasons. One is that she's a different ethnicity than the rest of them. And I was curious about, when you started writing this book, what was your research into that? Did you speak Spanish? Is that something you picked up? Is it just something you researched enough for the book? What's the necessary alteration for you as a writer to do that?
Well, I have studied Spanish, but I wouldn't say that I speak it. As I say in the acknowledgments page, I know just enough of it to make me dangerous, and so I relied upon one of my colleagues at OSU to help me with some of the Spanish. But, I lived in Texas for 5 years, and this book actually began with Miss Baby's section, even though in the finished book it appears about a third of the way in. The first scene I wrote was Miss Baby coming out of her tattoo parlor one evening and finding a man on the street corner who eventually tells her that he doesn't know who he is or how he got to Denton, Texas. Mm-hmm. And Miss Baby, seizing an opportunity that stuns her once it happens, tells him that he's her husband, and now let's go home. And they do go home, and over the period of weeks and months that they're together, they start to fall in love. To answer your question, it's simply a matter of immersing myself in the culture and the place. So I carried with me everything I knew from that part of Texas, mm-hmm. and that particular town in Texas, and that particular corner where Miss Baby discovered Lester Stipp.
Okay. But there isn't a Miss Baby's tattoo parlor.
No, there is not a Miss Baby's tattoo parlor.
I'm just curious how closely you adhered to that. Because there's the old adage, and you could tell me your opinion on this, write what you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is that something that you make a lot of use of? Is that something you repeat to students? Because you're writing something about which you know. But is that... there's always seems to be a double side to that. It can be good, it can be bad.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do tell students to write about what's genuine to them, what's authentic to them, as I try to do in my own work. And that doesn't necessarily mean the experiences that you've lived through. Mm-hmm. Often when those are put on the page by young writers, they don't leave enough room for invention and imagination. They just try to duplicate the facts of their lives. It often means writing from the conflicted feelings that we all experience as we grow up. The combination of sadness and anger, the combination of humiliation and pride, you know, whatever those might be. And so sometimes I think it's a good idea to find a way to look away from the self, but to always stay in touch with those moments from your past that brought out very conflicted emotional feelings in you. And so that's what I try to impress upon my students.
So reach for the painful. Conflicted moments.
Yeah, well, you can describe it as painful if you'd like, but it conflicted in whatever way.
Yeah. Okay. How do students generally respond to that? I mean, that's something that I'm guessing that MFA students really take in and sort of cherish, because that's something that as a writer you have this romantic notion of sort of chasing the conflict within your own life and using it for art.
Well, I think that by the time the students get to our MFA program, they've pretty much embraced what Faulkner called the human heart in conflict. And so really the kind of thing that I'm talking about happens most often in my undergraduate classes.
Okay. When did you start writing? Where did you get your start?
Oh, I always wrote. Okay. Not well, but I wrote. I started writing when I was a kid. Spent an afternoon deciding I'd write the next great Bobbsey Twins novel. That took about an hour. Knocked that one off. Mm-hmm. but I started my, you know, seriously writing when I was in college. And I started writing poems, which I think a lot of people do. Those angst-ridden teenage poems.
Again, reaching into the conflict.
Exactly.
The angst of youth.
Of lost love and aimless youth, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Okay. But then eventually I turned my attention to short fiction. And I did a bachelor's degree and a master's degree at Eastern Illinois University, and then worked for 3 years and decided that it was time to get serious about studying writing. And that's when I went to the University of Arkansas for their MFA program.
What made that turn for you? What was the idea that it's time to get serious about writing? You weren't happy with the day job. You list a number of day jobs, flipping burgers at Burger King or restaurants and things like that.
Yeah, and at the time, I was working a full-time job as a coordinator for a federal program that helped students get into college. Cool. But I was always writing, and I was writing in the evenings, and I decided that this MFA program might be a good thing. It would deepen my study of craft, and it would also start me on a path toward what I'd always wanted to do, which was teach.
Okay. When did you start calling yourself a writer then? Was it right around this time? Was it before or after the bachelor's you said you were a writer? I'm curious because you had a full-time job doing something else, and most people say, oh, I'm my full-time job. When you ask them their self-identity, when did that switch for you to take place till you said, I'm a writer now?
Well, I think at that time I probably wouldn't have answered the question, what do you do, by saying I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. I imagine I didn't start doing that until I actually started publishing.
You're listening to Writer's Talk from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University with my guest, OSU creative writing professor Lee Martin. You can learn more about Professor Martin at the links at www.writerstalk.org. Writers Talk is a co-production of the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University and The Ohio Channel, where you can watch videos of many of our interviews at www.ohiochannel.org. Now, back to my discussion with Lee Martin.
The advice then that people often get and the advice that you had talked about writing what you know, I'm curious about how you turn that into the process on yourself. And whether you only will, because you've written a couple things. You've written memoir, short stories, longer novels. What you tend to gravitate toward novels, which takes it away from memoir. And what is the turn there for you? Why the turn towards memoir if you're sort of more in a fictive mode?
Well, I really love working in both forms. I started as a fiction writer. And then when I went to the University of North Texas to teach, they assigned me a workshop in creative nonfiction. Mm. And I thought, well, you know, I should try to write some of this if I'm going to teach other people how to write this. So I wrote an essay called From Our House, which was the first time I had written directly about my father and the farming accident that cost him both of his hands when I was about a year old. And that essay opened up material that I had approached indirectly in all of my short stories. But for the first time, I was writing about it and claiming it as my experience. And I wrote about four essays, and before I realized I had a narrative arc and I had a book, and that became my first memoir, From Our House. Now, I find myself going back and forth between the two genres because there's just certain material that I want to own, and I want to announce that it is my experiences that I'm putting on the page, because that's what I really got out of writing From Our House, the first time of actually stepping forward and saying, this is who I was when I was a young man. I was in this very difficult relationship with my father who turned violent after his accident. But he and I eventually came to reconciliation and redemption. And there was something empowering about just claiming that as mine. And so that's what got me into nonfiction. It's what's kept me there. And it's what I enjoy about going back and forth between the two forms.
What was that like writing that first thing you said? Is that part of what led you to the redemption? Part was writing something that helped you through that, or was that something that was separate from and you were able to use writing to describe the experience?
Well, I always tell people that once somebody decides they're going to write a memoir, that person has pretty much accepted the fact that the writing will give them a way of thinking about the experience and a way of sorting through it and making some kind of sense out of it. So by the time I wrote From Our House, I was ready to face the material. So it wasn't a hard thing to start writing. And I don't like to think of writing as a therapeutic process, although I think it can be. I just know that by the end of my writing of From Our House, I was a slightly different person than I was when I began the book.
Okay. Now, we mentioned The Bride Forever from 2006, for which you were a Pulitzer Prize finalist. What was the experience like, the process like, of learning about that? Was it a phone call, email, skywriting over your house? How did they tell you, and how did you respond to it?
Well, it's really funny because you have no idea this news is coming. I was observing a graduate student's class at Ohio State that afternoon, and when I got back to my office, my inbox was full of congratulatory emails, and the first one was from a former student who said, "Did you know that The Bride Forever is a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize?" Well, no, I didn't know, and I thought it was like the National Book Awards, where there would be five finalists, and then in a month's time there'd be a ceremony where the winner would be announced. But that's not the way it works with the Pulitzer Prize. The winner is notified. The two finalists are not called. They find out through their friends who read it online or whatever. And then within a few weeks, I got a letter from the president of Columbia University, where the awards are done, and a congratulatory letter. But that was the extent of it.
Okay. Sounds a little anticlimactic.
There's nothing anticlimactic about it, Doug. it was a fantastic moment.
Okay, good. Well, I'll remember that when I get mine.
You do.
You know, since I've never published anything, I'm sure it's on its way. What's your best advice for a writer? What's the advice you seem to come back to? And I guess in a general sense, and I know much good advice comes, or probably most comes in specifics when you respond to a piece. Mm. But what do you think is the most useful advice you've gotten or given?
The best advice I ever read about writing, and this is what I pass on to everybody, comes from Isak Dinesen, who said, "I write a little each day without hope, without despair." And I think that that's a very, very wise thing, that what we need to do is forget about the result. In other words, forget about publication and all of the things that come with that, and become more interested in the process, the day-to-day process of exploring material, no matter the form that you're working in. And if you can do that, then I think the result will come. And I'm a firm believer that what brought us to this writing in the first place was not because we wanted to publish. It was because we had a love of language, and we understood in some way that language could help us better understand the world around us. And so that labor of love, of just following the words on the page, is what continues to satisfy me in all the years I've done this, and I hope it's what satisfies my students when they do it as well.
Okay. Let's get into the specifics about that. You said you get into the process, you love the process. What's a good day for you in writing? How do you judge? You know, I know you say no hope, no despair, mm-hmm. which is a pretty blanket statement, mm-hmm. you know, in some ways. Mm-hmm. But what is that specifically? Do you say, I'm not going to have hope or despair, but I'm going to have 4 pages?
No, I don't set any goals for myself, okay. As far as page, word count, anything like that. A good day for me, which will come soon this summer, I'm sure, now that I'm almost done with teaching, a good day would be 3 to 4 hours of work where I find myself completely immersed in the characters and their situations that I'm following on the page. If I get to the end of that time and I feel that I've gone more deeply into the characters and their situation, then I'm very, very satisfied.
Okay. You're sitting at the desk, you're typing, mm-hmm. Are you using a computer or longhand?
Well, sometimes I'll start longhand because I really feel that there's something about the movement of the hand across the page that helps me capture the rhythm of the prose that I'm going to use in whatever I'm working on. But eventually I'll switch to the computer, okay. Yes.
What are you like? I've always got this image of people authors sitting at the desk and they're typing away. Do you remember there used to be, I think Stephen Jay Cannell would have that at the end of each of his, uh-huh. you know, 6 million scripts and then he'd cast it out of a typewriter right. or something. But I've also had this idea that you're sitting there and sort of talking back to your characters and inhabiting. Is that something that happens for you, or is that just all upstairs? It never gets verbalized. You're very quiet. Sitting there not arguing, because there seems to be a divide among authors on how they do that.
I'm very quiet. I'm just trying to listen to my characters. I do a lot of staring out the window until I hear the line I need, or I figure out a little problem in the narrative that I've been struggling with, but I don't say much to my characters.
You're an active blogger at leemartinauthor.com, which I found really interesting because your books are categorized as serious fiction. And there are a lot of views, I think, by people doing serious fiction about the internet. It's Satan, you know, it's bad for authors. But do you see that as a distinctly separate genre? Is it a variant on memoir for you when you're blogging about things in your life? How do you feel about that?
First of all, I have to say that I was really resistant to the idea of a blog, but advice was, if you're going to have a website, a blog is a necessary component of the website.
It almost said evil. but you said component. That was nice.
But once I started doing the blog, I found that I really enjoyed it. I look at it sometimes as you say, a variant of memoir. When I'm writing about, say, for example, a recent post I did about the pronunciation of the word peony, the flower, mm-hmm. Which we always said piney in southeastern Illinois. That led me to a piece that would be very close to something I would do in memoir. But other times I'm writing about the craft of writing or writing about the teaching of writing. And I find that the blog becomes an extension of the conversations that are going on in my workshops among my students. Sometimes something's said in a class that I feel we didn't get at as well as we could have, and so mm-hmm. I'll write about that. So I'm really enjoying this way of engaging with readers, either about personal stories or about pedagogical concerns or just the craft itself. Yeah,
I was surprised by how long some of the entries were, mm-hmm. because I thought this is a significant investment, because you're also on Twitter, for example, and the tweets are by necessity less than 140 characters, but you're directing them back to the blog, and which are really long. And to me, that's a really interesting split, because those audiences are so different. You know, if you're reading tweets, you're like, check, 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 check. And if you're reading something that long, you're really into the craft, or so I assume. The last question I have to know is, your blog and your book of short stories are both titled The Least You Need to Know. Mm-hmm. What attracts you to that phrase? What is the least you need to know?
Well, the phrase comes from the title story of my first story collection, a story in which a son writes about a father whose job is to clean up crime scenes after the police have released them. And in the midst of that story, we run up against the idea of how much we can stand to know about the people that we love. So the assumption is that there are always things beneath the surface. And the cover of that book is a painting of a closed door, which I hope invites the reader to think about what's on the other side of that door, and how much courage does it take to walk through and see what's on the other side of that door. And so I like it as the title of the blog, because I think anybody engaged in the craft of writing or the profession of teaching is always coming up against those same questions of how can we open the doorways to the things that we might not want to talk about but need to talk about.
Is there a danger for you as an author in knowing too much about a character on the other side, where you say, okay, I can't write about this person because I'm no longer interested?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you know too much about the character too early, that character can only be that person that you've decided he or she is. And what I'd rather see in a piece of fiction is a character who's capable of surprise as they evolve through the circumstances of the narrative.
Okay. And that leads you to the idea of you don't work your arcs out in advance. You're surprised by the endings.
The first novel I wrote, I gave it a classic three-act structure, and I knew what I was headed toward at the end of each of the three acts. But since then, I've really operated on this principle of curiosity. And even though, say, in The Bright Forever, when I knew that the book would have a certain arc to it, I didn't have any idea how I was going to get from one point to another, and so I'm really just trying to make myself curious and satisfy that curiosity.
Okay. So Break the Skin is satisfying curiosity for you from now on. All these books are going to be satisfying your curiosity, so we just have to find out what you're curious about, and that's how we get a book.
There you go. Yeah, just let me, ask me and I'll tell
ask
you.
Me, okay. All right, well, thank you very much for being here on Writer's Talk, Martin. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it too.
You've been listening to Writer's Talk from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University with my guest, OSU Creative Writing Professor Lee Martin. More information can be found about him at www.writerstalk.org. Or you can go to the Writer's Talk section of the OSU bookstore, where you'll find books and DVDs from some of our recent interview subjects. Join me next time for humor writer Sloane Crosley, interviewed by OSU student Kevin Bauer. Until then, This is Doug Dangler from The Ohio State University. Keep writing.